Welcome one, welcome all, step right up, ladies and gentlemen, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 152 is coming at you right now. To the future, to the horizon is the name of this episode. Howdy everybody, Portal Gaming Podcast is a podcast brought to you by a store called The Portal, which is located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.theportalct.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and on Twitter, at PortalGaming60. Howdy, everybody. I am your host, The Brant, for this episode number 152 of the Portal Game Podcast, which is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Woo! It is a scorcher here in Connecticut. I'm not sure where you are when you're listening to this, but it has been very hot. It has been Florida-esque weather, especially humidity, and that is not my friend. You probably hear my air conditioner running in the background, and I'm going to leave it on because I am not a fan of the heat. But it is nice to have summer. It's nice to be able to just kind of go outside and have the light, so I'm not super complainy about it, but that's yeah, that's kind of where we're at with all that. I hope everything's going well for all of you. I know this coronavirus thing is a mess. In Connecticut, we've actually been doing pretty well, and we're opening things back up a little faster than usual. We just got the word that schools plan to open in the fall. Holy, I know it's not that way everywhere around the world, especially around the country in America here, where things are a mess. But hopefully you're staying safe, staying home, playing board games, and whatnot. I got a chance to participate in Virtual Con, which is the Board Game Geek and Dice Tower Con. I taught Marvel Champions at 8 o'clock in the morning my time to four people. Went pretty well. And, well, I participated in a game of Terraforming Mars with Stephen Bonacore, the digital version, and I came in dead last. So, but it was fun to hang out and to do all that and see people and whatnot. So, not a huge online virtual gamer. Hasn't been my favorite thing, but I really like seeing the people that I would normally see 2-3 times in a year at conventions. So that's really been my favorite part. I guess I'm fortunate enough to have gamers in my house. Kathy's a gamer. Zephyr's playing more than she did in the past. She's been into more things. And Brian is here and his wife and his son. And then I get a chance to play a few games at the store when we need to do reviews and whatnot. So, been lucky on that front that I don't need to play everything online, and whatnot. So we'll see. I tried to do something on Tabletopia by myself, Warp's Edge from Renegade, and it was fine. It was working, but it wasn't optimal. It wasn't my favorite to try to maneuver all of those things around. So that's where that was. Okay. Episode number 152. I'm going to try to do the best I can to get through all this. It's a lot. I'm just going to do two reviews up front for you here, and then I'm going to do my top games. No, sorry, just games in general. My games played in the month of March. This is the segment I've stolen from Rotto and others, Brothers Murph, I know I've seen doing it. And I've ranked all the games, most of the games, 30 games that I played in the month of May. I know by the time you hear this, it's going to be the end of June, but that's where I'm at. So May 2020, here's 30 games ranked that I played, and how I felt about that particular play. So that's kind of where I'm going here. So two reviews right off the top. The first one is Forgotten Waters from Plaid Hat Games. I got a chance to play this app-driven game, pirate-themed game. So everybody gets a pirate, and you get to name your pirate, and you have a little story that you fill out. It kind of has like a Mad Libs element, and it asks you for an object and something heavy, and it asks you for an animal, and then you fill them all in a Mad Libs, and it kind of gives you a backstory for your character. It's definitely got a lot of tongue-in-cheek humor. And then you are a crew on a pirate ship, and you're sailing around. You have various adventures, and it's all run by an app. So we had an iPad running, and we were able to check this out. And it'll kind of progress the story, and it picks random elements, and you have like a scenario where something's happening. It voices all the characters except your own for you. You read your story to each other. And I thought that it was semi-co-op, but I'm pretty sure after this play, which is just one play, that I think it's just full co-op. I don't think there's a semi-co-op. element. There's a little bit of backstabbing, and you're trying to eventually score points for yourself. But what I liked was the scoring points for yourself is just to get the better part of your story at the end. It's not so that you quote-unquote win. So that was kind of a neat element of the game. And so what happens is you turn the page in this book. It's kind of like a spiral-bound book. And then you have 45 seconds to assign your tokens, your worker placements, to a different spot on the boat. Are you going to hoist the sails? Are you going to go shopping when you're in town? Are you going to feed the crew? Are you going to swab the deck? Are you going to do the sailing? Whatever it is, you kind of pick what you're going to do without reading what it does. And then once that timer's out, everybody triggers their actions and does what it says. And you find out kind of what you did, and oh, you had to spend supplies to feed the crew, or you get to sail the ship and you move around the little grid that's on the board, and encounter new things and see what happens. The mission we were playing was the intro one, so there was like a ship that was trying to chase us down while we're trying to get to a port. And yeah, really the app drives everything. You have like a little initiative thing where you see who gets to go first, and players get to pick various things. But you're kind of working your way through that with some random encounters and things, and there's ability to fire guns, and there's like a little, I want to call it a doom tracker, but I can't remember what the specific name of it was, but all these different things. It was really neat. It was, like I said, it was very humorous. It was trying to be silly in its approach, which could throw some people off if they want kind of like a serious pirate game. I think the parrot's name was like Pancakes or something, Captain Pancakes. So it's that kind of, you know, silly humor. I wouldn't say it was childish, like it wasn't necessarily aimed at kids, but it would be like a Pixar, Disney level humor, you know, that they're going for where adults will be entertained and, you know, it's kind of aimed at both audiences, I think. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was lots of fun. You know, you get to pick all these things. It picks a certain person. You're picking on the app like, oh, you're the person with the most charisma or whatever. I don't think that's exactly it, but you get to make the choice here. And you're picking different things, and it's very story-driven. We did lose as a team. I think we didn't quite understand, like, running all the supplies and keeping everything around. And I did find that I was kind of stuck on the bottom, and the last people are kind of forced to do certain actions because you need to feed the crew and you need to sail the ship to keep it going. So sometimes you kind of get stuck in that boat, and that wasn't my favorite. Haha, stuck in that boat. That wasn't my favorite. But the game was really fun. I totally like story-driven games when they're done like this. This made the story way more important than the playing of the game. But there were still choices. I thought the choices were interesting. So I did not pick up a copy personally. I wasn't sure it was something that Kathy and Zephyr would get totally into. I know Zephyr would probably like the app. Kathy liked story-driven things, but I wasn't sure that pirates were their theme. So I didn't quite go to that extent, but I'm definitely looking to play it again. And it was something I would sit down. I think this would be a great con game. I think it would be really fun when you're just kind of looking to play something with a group of people. And I believe it plays 3-7, and it has 2-player rules on the website and 1-player rules where you control more than one pirate and kind of go through that. You're trying to achieve various things. I guess I missed a few of those. You're trying to, like, you can draw certain cards to increase your values. So you do a lot of die rolling. Like, you're going to sail the ship, so roll your navigation, which might be a 2, and then you roll a d12, and you get a 14 if you roll a 12, and then something happens based on that. But you can constantly increase your skills, and as you increase your skills, you get, oh, what would they be, like destiny points? I'm trying to think of a pirate word for destiny. And as you get these, you have like a star, like a constellation that you're filling in. As you get to the end of those, you get more bonuses, and you get points towards your final game story. Unfortunately, like I said, our boat ran aground on rocks and sunk, and we all died. So we did not win, so we didn't get to see that. But yeah, all in all, I really liked the game. I think it would be a great game with families. I didn't really find anything like questionably appropriate. I feel like the humor was just kind of silly. It wasn't, you know, kind of dirty humor or anything, and there wasn't like private cursing. But that was my experience from the opening scenario. I don't know what levels they have on different ones. But I think it was pretty fun to let people make their choices, and I thought that Mad Libs thing was really fun to just kind of pick words and fill everything out. So, yeah, if you're looking for a good story-driven game, this one is it. As far as I know, we got like halfway through before we died, and that was about an hour, so I think it's like a 2-hour game. But I wonder if it's like Mansions of Madness, where they kind of tell you, this scenario is 2 hours, this one's 4 hours, this one's 9 hours. I think that would be good to kind of know. And I don't know if it has a save feature. It wasn't my copy that I was playing, so I'm not certain on that, but definitely an enjoyable game. Forgotten Waters from Plaid Hat Games. Next up is my Father's Day gift, which originally I said, nah, I'm good. I don't need a Father's Day gift. We'll play some games. We'll go play some Frisbee. And then I remembered that coming out on Father's Day was none other than Back to the Future, Back in Time. Now, this is one of two Back to the Future games. This is the one from Funko Games. There's another one from Ravensburger, and I haven't played that one yet. So Back in Time is Funko's follow-up to last year's Horrified, I suppose, which is a Ravensburger, but it's Prospero Hall. And so what's happening here is they're taking the first movie, and you're in 1955. I'm going to assume people are roughly familiar with Back to the Future. And so you're already there, and what you need to do by the end of the game is you need to get George and Lorraine to fall in love. There's a little love track which goes around the photo of Marty's siblings, if you remember that from the movie. And then you need to get the DeLorean to Doc Brown's house, collect the parts to fix it, and then get it on the street by the clock tower before it turns to 10.04 p.m. November 12th, I believe. 10.04 p.m. 1955, so you can send Marty back to the future, which is where my title, my Yoda, to the future, to the horizon title came from. Although it sounds like he's cheering him on. He's actually laying into Luke that he needs to not always look to those things and pay attention to what's in front of him. Anyway, that's kind of the idea. Now, what's happening is on your turn, you have a bunch of tiles. So first thing you're going to do is you're going to move up on a little track and you're going to draw like a trouble card and a movement card, and George and Lorraine could care less about each other, so they kind of move around Hill Valley and you're trying to get them together so they can be in the same space. And Biff is trying to mess with them. If he's with either George or Lorraine, he will lower the love meter. So you're trying to get him out of there. You can knock him out, sucker punch him, and keep him down so that he won't keep coming after them. So on your turn, you have a bunch of tiles with abilities, mostly dice, and there's different colored dice for different things. So you're going to move to a location by flipping one of those tiles. You can move three spaces, and then you're going to use some number of dice, including cooperating with other people. If they're at your space, you can use their dice. You roll them. The clock tower is a dice tower, which is pretty nice. I'm not a huge dice tower fan, but I find in something like this, where it's set up, it wasn't bad to use. Similar to like Wingspan, where you have the birdhouse, and you could use that. What'd you say? Oh, yeah, it was a little bit in the way in the game. That's Kathy in the background saying it was a little bit in the way from where she was sitting on the table. So I could take it or leave it, but it was a cute addition and a way for people to kind of see dice towers. So I don't think it was a detractor overall. Detractor? Nah, Kathy says take it or leave it. So anyway, you roll the dice, and then you're going to get results. And you can keep rolling and rolling and rolling as long as you want, but if you ever roll a Biff head, then you have to set that one aside, and you can't re-roll it. Then you're going to look for, like, how many times was I successful? So I was either trying to move the DeLorean, or I was trying to collect parts, or I was trying to sucker punch Biff, or I was trying to get George and Lorraine to fall in love by putting them in the same location and having them chit-chat, you know, about things or whatever. That's how people fall in love. They chit-chat. And so that's kind of what you're going for. There's a huge element of cooperation, and there's an extreme element of luck, but there are tiles you can get, and there's other activities you can do. You can stop the trouble. There's other like side things going on that you can do, and you can gain more power tiles, which have more dice and abilities on them, which is a must in my mind. And then you just have a certain number of turns to kind of get all this together. It's tough. Biff is a huge pain in the butt. He is difficult. Now, a lot of co-op games, which I didn't mention it was co-op, a lot of co-op games have, like, these elements of, like, this is an issue, and this is an issue, and this is an issue, and this is an issue. And this game, straight up, Biff is the issue. So he is going to annoy you highly. You could be very frustrated with him, which is very thematic to the movies and the story. But there are a lot of other issues to deal with. You're not trying to convince people that you're traveling through time. You're not trying to get back in time into different timelines and all this kind of stuff. You're really focusing on that issue. So it takes a lot of focus. It takes pretty good luck on the die rolls. I played it several times, but one of the times I played with Kathy, we got to the final roll, and I'm like, well, you just got to try to roll all these dice. And she's like, I'm not sure we're going to win. And she made like an outstanding roll to make George and Lorraine fall in love at the end, just like when George punches Biff and they you know, live happily ever after, and whatnot. And it was a great moment. That's a great moment for small co-op games like this, dice rolling, when you can do that. Of course, it could have been the reverse, and it could have been a wretchedly terrible roll, and we could have been throwing everything back in the box, knowing that Marty was forever stuck to hang out with his parents in 1955. So, goes both ways, but all in all, fun game, not very long, a little bit longer scales. It has different tracks for 2, 3, and 4 players, so it's nice on that front. Is a little weird, I guess, thematically. There's Marty and Doc, and then there's Jennifer and Einstein, which people thought were weird picks, but because George and Lorena Biff are in the game itself, NPCs, it's kind of where they had to go. You know, so you escape a little bit of theme. Fun artwork. It's not stills from the movie, it's artwork, which I thought was really nice. And all in all, as a Back to the Future fan, I absolutely loved it. I showed Zephyr Back to the Future recently, all three, and I thought it was phenomenal. If you're not a fan of the IP, I could see this game being a pass. I feel like something like Horrified probably makes a little more sense because there's more replayability in something like that versus this. So this is definitely living on the IP. But again, whereas I talk about a lot of strategy, heavy Euro game, whatever, this is a game where just thematically and just rolling dice and sitting back with people was a lot of fun. Once we're out of this quarantine thing, I can see having people over and just playing a game like this and still being able to chit-chat and do other things and be focused on a game, but not overly worried about, like, am I winning and how am I doing? And this is where co-ops work so great. So that is Back to the Future, Back in Time from Funko Games. All right, so now we're going to move into the main part of the podcast here, because that was only 16 minutes. And I'm going to rank 30 games that I played in May. So I'm not going to talk a lot about these, and I think only one that I know, two of them, have future reviews coming up in terms of that. So most of them I've either talked about before, or maybe I'm not going to talk about, whichever, but away we go. And I'll kind of let you know when the games get to like, ooh, this is, you know, this is really good here. Okay, so number 30 would be Llama. This is the card game from Reiner Nizia, and I reviewed it recently, and I don't like it. The kids like it, and I would play it because kids want to play it. But overall, there's not a lot going on here. I don't know if it's better or worse than Uno. It's probably better. I'm not sure what the appeal was. It's not something I'm really even interested in playing again. Number 29 is Silver River. I reviewed this somewhat recently, too, maybe a month ago. And it was a 4X game that plays in under 2 hours, but the components are lackluster, the choices are lackluster, the asymmetric powers were lackluster, and all in all, it's just something that I would pass on. I didn't find all that interesting. I do think if you're a 4X like aficionado or fan, I could see you wanting to try this to have something different in that genre, but all in all, I've got enough of those games that I think this one doesn't really have enough merit for me to hang on to. Number 28 was Cartographers. So this is kind of where it moves to like, okay, I would play games again from here. So that's nice to know. There's two that I'm like just not interested in playing again, and 28 that I would. So Cartographers is actually a Spiel des Jahres nom. Or is it Kenner? I don't remember. I think it's a Kenner nom. It's a flip and write or a roll and write, which is just not my genre except Fleet the Dice Game. And it definitely had interesting choices. It was nice. It was weird that you pass and you mess each other's up, because it seemed like you mess each other up pretty significantly. It's hard to know how to leave that open. But it was definitely creative in the scoring. I could see where that was more interesting to people. It was creative in giving you options, like, do you want to add to blue or yellow? And we took the suggestion of some people, and we used colored pencils. And I thought that kind of brightened everything up and made it a little more interesting. So all in all, something I'd play again. I would go to an event where they say, we're going to play Cartographers with 50 people. Sure, I'll show up and try it. But it's not something I'm looking to play again. So, to me, not one of the better games of the year, but it was fun. I could see the appeal for people. Next up is Chocolate Factory. Now, this is a game I was really excited about, and it just ended up, I actually really enjoyed the solo play a lot, but the two-player game I played in May was just not good. It was just, the drafting was so lackluster. It was, do you want this pile or that pile? And then you're going to be forced to take the other one. So it just, there wasn't that much interesting to it. And you got lots of choices, so you could find what you want. Our scores were so close, but there were things that were cutthroat, because it's like, if you're tied, then one player gets all the points if they got there first. And that's just tricky in something like two-player. So it was neat how everything moves through the factory, and that was kind of like a thematic like, I don't know, that logistics of how I would plan moving chocolate through a factory felt kind of real, and it was strategic and logistical, so that was nice that it wasn't, like, pasted on in terms of that, but that was kind of all it had going. It looks very nice, but wasn't quite what I had hoped for. So that's Chocolate Factory from Alley Cat Games. 26 is Rapido. This is something that I picked up kind of for quarantine. We used to play all the time. Rapido is Pictionary with clay. But the best part is, after you kind of make your guess, whichever team wins, there's a little plunger, and you steal clay from the other team. Although you don't steal it, you take it. Put it back in their bin. And so eventually, the winner is when you have no clay left. You lose and the other team wins. But eventually it gets down to you have this little tiny mound of clay and you're trying to make something before the other team guesses theirs. And it's quite a humorous moment. It was a fun one to play. Like, we literally played it a couple times after dinner with the kids and everything. And it got a lot of chuckles. So it was fun. But, I mean, that's what the game is. But it was fun to do that. Number 25 is Metro X. I remember playing this at Dice Tower Con and just really, really liking it. And now I played this version. It just felt like a flipping right. I don't mean to be negative about these games. I want these games to be fun. I don't even think they're that bad. But I think I'm just inundated. I don't know what to do with them. they all have the puzzle element. And I like the puzzles. But I think I like an escape room style puzzle better. And whatnot. And so Metrox was interesting. I'd like to try the solo. I mean, it's so quick. The game's 15 minutes. So, you know, I totally play them. I don't have an issue, but I just wasn't as in love with it as the first time I had played it this time here. So that is Metro X. Number 24 is Lotus. This is a game I picked up, was it my first Gen Con or my second Gen Con? I think it was the second Gen Con I went to, and I picked this one up for Kathy, and it is beautiful artwork, and Zephyr really likes to play this game, and it's a really fun game. I think it's one of those ones that now that I've played it 15, 20 times, it just kind of slides down the list for me sometime. But I'm super happy when Zephyr says, let's play Lotus, because that is a game that I enjoy playing, as opposed to something else that I might not enjoy as much. But I will still play. I'm not trying to be negative on that front. Yeah, so that's Lotus. Just kind of one of those games we've had around for a while, and it is enjoyable. Number 23 was The Liberation of Rietberg. This is a new game from Cosmos, and this kind of moves up now to, like, games that I'm like, hey, this is a good game. I'm excited to play this. And this game really shocked me. I just thought it was going to be just kind of like, all right, well, here's a kid's version of Legend of Andor or whatever. And as I played the different characters, they were interesting. I was like, I want to play that character, and I want to try the next character. I'd be willing to play this game 5 times in a row. I don't know if it's in a row. The basic mode is very easy. It's definitely allowing you to play with kids so they could just make decisions, and you're probably going to win no matter whether they're optimal or not. So you're going to want to play on the harder mode if it's kind of with gamers. I would bring this to a game night. I would play this with people, like, hey, who wants to play this? It's, you know, 40 minutes, so it's a nice time. Especially kind of in this day, you're hearing a lot of people talk about, like, going to gaming events and not getting to game because they feel like everybody's stuck in a game. So a game like this that's 40 minutes, it's light, it's breezy, there's something to it, seems kind of more interesting to me than like a 3-hour game. I feel like if I'm going to play a 3-hour game at a meetup, I kind of want to like schedule that and let people know like, hey, I'm going to play this and so I'm not going to be available in terms of all that. But this one's kind of the opposite. So yeah, it's enjoyable co-op that you're, you know, trying to defend a castle, and it's totally something I would just bring out any time and play. It's so easy to teach, so easy to play. And I found the asymmetrical characters interesting enough to keep replaying. So that's Liberation of Rietberg from Cosmos. Next up is Claim from Deepwater Games and Scott Alms. And Claim is a 2-player card game, trick-taking game. And it's got a lucky streak and a mean streak to it. If you draw the right cards, it's got a lot of take that on the other player. I know for Kathy and I, she's listening in, so she'll probably correct me if I'm speaking for her. But generally, take that is not something we enjoy. But in 2-player games, we tend to be a little more open to it because, like, I'm literally just affecting the other player. So it doesn't bother us as much. Yep, she's nodding. Although, lately, in the last 3 to 4 months, a lot of dueling games have not been Kathy's favorite. The old magician duel style game isn't necessarily what she wants to play. Some, I think, feel like classics. We've been playing them for a while, like Ashes, and the artwork is so nice. I think the aesthetic is a big piece of that for her. But Claim is a trick-taking game that I actually want to play a lot more of, because I've got Claim, and I've got Claim 2, and I've got bonus ones, and it's pretty quick. But we had played several games in May. We may have played some in April, because it's Blur's Day. But yeah, it's an interesting... There's a lot of these... I think in the... Did I review this? I feel like I reviewed Claim, and I feel like I said that like Fox in the Forest I thought was a little bit better in terms of the two-player trick-taking games, but there's a total different think. That one's got like actual like ramifications long-term, and Claim is just trying to be... Let's knock out a two-player trick-take game in 10 minutes. It's just very quick in terms of all that. But yeah, I'm excited because it's got different like races and powers, and asymmetry always gets me into a game. It's like my number one mechanism in terms of all that. But yeah, that's Claim, number 22. Number 21 is Edge of Darkness. I played this again after a while. I did a review back in the day, and Matt Bartlett did a review. He's going to do a review? Oh, no. Is a review on the blog on our website. I apologize, I can't remember if it's up yet, but he was going to do one, so he had played several times, so we got a chance to play with him again. And it was nice, with somebody else teaching and kind of knowing what to do, we knocked out like a game of this relatively quickly, and it was pretty fun. I liked it. It's a lot. It's a big buy-in. We were able to play in under 2 hours, which was great, but there's a lot of moving parts, a lot to set up, a lot to take down, which generally doesn't bother me. Hey, I play Gloomhaven. But this one, I'm not sure that quite gets me over that barrier, but it was definitely very fun this time that we played. So it was something I would consider playing with people. There's so many options in the box. I don't know if I can go there. I don't know if I can get my brain to like, oh, now you've got to try to think this way in this set of cards. Whereas something like a Dominion, that would be really interesting to me, or a Heart of Crown or something. But there's a lot going on. It was a really neat game. I mean, it's just really... innovative, honestly. This game, you know, you could argue it's a deck builder, but it's just so different, and you've got a common deck with everybody. So this obviously should have been an innovative game award in my mind. Edge of Darkness. Wow, something we played way more than I thought we would is number 20, Dice Throne. This has been very popular. Not so much in June, but we did play it recently, but in May and late April, I think, Zephyr and I were playing this left and right. I got Kathy to play a game or two of Dice Throne as well. She was a little more meh. I think dice are just dice. But the aesthetic, again, helps a whole bunch. You get these trays and everything comes out and it's got components and the artwork is just really nice and you've got cool characters. You've got samurai, you've got gunslingers, and you've got angels and all these cool different things that you get to fight with. And then you're essentially playing like Yahtzee dice rolling with some card play and whatnot. But I don't know. It's just a fun... romp through all that. It's just a great game. It's that level that I want to play with a 10-year-old. You know, where there are decisions to make and things can happen, but then the dice kind of decide the fate, and I just don't mind that, and I like just picking a different character each time. Oh no, it's asymmetry again, which you could see the theme of games I've been playing. All right, number 19 is Adrenaline. I did a review of the solo and the DLC pack and got to play this as well. Adrenaline's just a great game. It's a cool first-person shooter game, and you're running around. It's just really clever, and it's really area control. You're trying to get your tokens onto other players' boards, which is really their health, so you can have majorities, so you can win when that character it takes its last damage and is dead in the video game, but gives you points, the most points for doing that. And there's just lots of guns and ideas, and they work very mechanically for me. So, I mean, if you're really looking for that, like, speed and thrill... and adrenaline rush of a first-person shooter, that's where a video game comes in. But this kind of gives you that clever idea with that piece pasted over it. But I'll tell you that thematically, this game is just going to work for a very small crowd. There's just a group of people that want to do that and kind of feel that aggressive, even though it's a strategy game. And there's a group that doesn't, because when I play with Kathy and Zephyra, they just, like, it was like a 20-minute timer. When the timer went up, they were like, hey, great, have a good day. It just thematically could not draw them in, so... That is Adrenaline, number 19. Number 18, this has actually been a surprise hit, I would say. I had kind of heard about this and knew it was coming out, but didn't realize. And this is Abandon All Artichokes. And this is a game from Game Right and Emma Larkins, fellow Dice Tower Podcast Network, on Ludology. And in Abandon All Artichokes, that's what you're trying to do. You have a hand, you have a deck of 10 artichokes, and your goal is to draw a hand of 5 cards with no artichokes in it. So you could have some in your deck. So there's a little bit of that luck element. but you're trying to get rid of your artichokes. And it's really, really simple deck builder. There's no money. There's no currency in the game. So you just pull a card from the center row. There's five cards face up. And you do what that card says. And it's a vegetable. Typically allowing you to compost to be eco-friendly. Compost your artichokes. And then you kind of discard that card. And then you can play some other cards in the beginning. You don't really have anything else to play. And that's it. And then your turn's over and you draw new cards. And it's a deck builder. You shuffle and you keep going. And it's just got lots of great interaction. Pull a card off of somebody's deck and you can play it, or get rid of an artichoke, but then put that card, I think that's the onion, you put that in somebody else's, or look at the top of your deck. And you can kind of win by like streamlining your deck. You could win by making your deck really big and kind of getting the artichokes out of there and working through like putting cards on top of your deck. If you get enough of that, you could just get five cards on top, even though you still have all your artichokes. So it has like subtle layers of the strategy, but it's a really, you know, small, cute container, easy to set up and play, 10, 15, 20 minutes with a family, and I've just played it a lot. It's very fun. It's the kind of the game I've carried around to play with various people. That is Abandon All Artichokes from Game Right. 17 is Welcome to the Dungeon. This has come out. This was a favorite of mine from several years ago. Welcome to the Dungeon is just a push your luck. It's the whole, we're all going to go through a dungeon, we're a mage, and I say, well, I could go through that dungeon without my cloak. I could leave my staff behind. And you're doing all those kind of things. And they're like, oop, I know there's a dragon in that dungeon, but I'm not going to tell anybody. You're just drawing a card, seeing what monster it is, and then either adding it to the dungeon or taking it out of the dungeon and removing an item from the mage or the barbarian or whatever it is. And then there's also Welcome Back to the Dungeon that has four more characters. It's silly. The kids like to push their luck way too far. They don't quite understand the concept of, like, if I run through a dungeon naked with 10 enemies that I'm going to die, but that's what they have fun with. So that's why this is kind of a little bit further down the list than like if I played this, you know, with people really trying to bluff and strategize against each other, but fun game. Actually, another surprise from May was Castle Panic, which I think I did a big old review last month because I had not really ever reviewed it. But Castle Panic was a lot of fun to play. I haven't played it as much recently. This is weird being a month out. But I played with several of the expansions mixed in and whatnot, and I was really, really pleasantly surprised. I would say the one part that's tricky, the reading on the cards can be a little tricky to kind of get down what they're saying, and it's long. Like, it's a solid hour to play, so you need somebody that's going to sit there with you for an hour, you know, family-style co-op game. But a great way to play a co-op where you have your turn, yet you still interact with the other players. Castle Panic from Fireside Games. Next up is Draftosaurus from Akama, and I really, really like Draftosaurus. I love dinosaurs. It is like the most basic of drafting games with a little board, and it's double-sided, and you get to draft dinosaurs. I think I actually reviewed this like a year ago. This is a great game. I think it was a spiel on the recommended list, and I definitely could have seen this being a nomination. It's really good. I really like that a lot. Draftosaurus. Fuji Flush from Stronghold Games. And Friedman Freeze. That's actually another surprise hit that we played. This has been like a post-dinner game. Fuji Flush is a game where you're trying to get rid of all your cards. So a card-shedding game. And you play a card in front of you, and they're basically number 2 through 20. And then the next player plays a card, and if they play a card higher than yours, you discard your card and draw a new one. But if it gets all the way back around to you and nobody's played a card higher than you, then you shed your card, and then you just get rid of it, and then you get to play another card. That would be boring, except for Friedman Freeze was smart enough to put another rule in to make it more interesting, which is if I play the same number as somebody else, we add our numbers together. So I play a 5, Josie plays a 4, Johnny plays a 4, they now have 8, 4 plus 4, and they cancel my 5, and I have to draw a new card. And now somebody needs to play a 9 to make them both discard their cards. There are a lot more lower numbered cards in the deck, and there's only like one of 16 through 20. So, again, you play with odds and all that. And it's just fun. It's got some smiley faces and some frowny faces when things happen and go your way and don't go your way. And probably in the end, it's just going to be somebody's going to win because they're going to win. But it's just a fun, quick game to play. Number 15 is Robin of Loxley. This is an Uwe Rosenberg game from Rio Grande Games, and it's really clever. The main mechanism is a knight, a chess knight, and you move in that direction, and you're collecting goods. You're robbing from the rich to give to the poor. And you're trying to collect sets, and then you can get coins, and you're trying to achieve all these different strange actions, things that you need to do. Sometimes it's just have coins. Sometimes it's have certain sets. Have sets that your opponent has. And you're both Robins of Loxley, and you're trying to prove who is the best one by getting around this track the fastest and helping the most people in need. In terms of that. Now, what's really clever is if you can't do something, you can pay a coin to move past it. So it gives you that mitigation of like, okay, I can't do this, so I'm going to move here and try to maximize your movements, and it's essentially a race game to get to the end. It's two-player only. It's probably its own drawback, but it wouldn't work with four players because it would just be a mess. In two players, you could say, okay, I'm going to move here, and I limit my opponent to these, and then I'll be able to move to this. So you can just play off of like, let me just think one turn ahead because I know what my opponent's going to do. And this got a lot of play earlier in the year. I have no idea, but I want to say like January. And we pulled it out again recently, and it was still as fun. It's my number 15 game of May. No, it's 13. Sorry. Can't read my own handwriting. This is where things start to get messy. All right. Number 12 is New Frontiers. Actually, I'm going to talk about these two together. Number 12 is New Frontiers. Number 11 is Jump Drive. Opposite ends of the spectrum. These are both Race for the Galaxy games. So New Frontiers is the big box Race for the Galaxy with tiles, and you're drawing out of a bag, and you're choosing actions, and everybody gets to take the same action as you. And then Jump Drive is like the quick, you know, you play a planet, you play a development, and you're trying to work your way through. I ultimately like Jump Drive better, but I mean, they're very close. It's a matter of, do I want to play a 7-minute game or maybe 15 minutes, try and explain it, or do I want to play an hour-long game? With Race for the Galaxy generally in the middle, minus the learning curve. And they're both quite enjoyable. I had played New Frontiers before at 5 players, and it was just too much. But now I got a chance to play it with 3, and it was a blast. I enjoyed it. And Jump Drive is just, it's so quick. The only thing with Jump Drive is that somebody, you're trying to get to 50 points, and somebody just gets there, and it's over. And you basically are just like, let's reshuffle and play again, is kind of the idea. Whereas New Frontiers, you're not going to do that. You're playing a full-on game, and you're trying to make choices in terms of all that. But yeah, they're both, you know, kind of in that same vein. It's just, do I want to play a game for a while, or do I want to play something quick? And they're totally just different mindsets, there. Number 10's a game I haven't reviewed yet. Kathy's going to do this review with me. And this is Tang Garden from Lucky Duck Games. This has been very talked about lately. Very popular game. This is like aesthetic through and through. The game is relatively straightforward in that on your turn, you're either going to play a tile to the board, which you're creating like a Zen garden, or you're going to draw a card, which lets you play, what would be the word for those, Kathy? Like, you're going to add accoutrements. Yeah, you're going to add actual 3D models. So you're going to add little pavilions, features, I think is what they call in the game. You're going to add these, like, not landscape, like horizon tiles that are actually vertical, and they have like nice artwork on them. So by the end of the game, you've got this garden where you put pavilions down, and you've got birds, and you've got flowers, and little bridges that you could cross the water, and it's gorgeous. But all the while, you're playing a strategy game. I was actually surprised. Mechanically, the game is so incredibly simple, but decision-wise, you're trying to like get people to come visit your garden, and then they stare in one direction, and they're going to score points because, like, ooh, I see deer, or ooh, I see a pavilion, or I'm trying to see flowers, whatever they're trying to see. And there's kind of all this scoring that you're getting from building that. And I was actually surprised that, like, it feels like it would just be kind of one of these, like, 30-minute lantern-style games, and it's a solid, like, hour-plus game with serious decisions. Not overwrought. You know, it's still a light game in my mind, but the decisions, you're like, oh, I'm actually considering what I want to do, not just, yeah, I know what I'm going to do, and that's how it happens, which makes it a little bit longer. And that might be my only negative on the game, but it was my number 10 of the month, Tang Garden. Number 9 is Harvest. This is a game I've been trying to play for a long time. This is TMG and Trey Chambers. Trey Chambers made one of my favorite games, Argent the Consortium, and also Imperial Spells and Steam, and so I really wanted to get to play this, and Harvest is like just a little card, like worker placement, card drafting game, kind of humorous, asymmetric powers. Everybody starts with a different, like, gardener, and you're trying to collect all these various things and plant them and harvest them and tend them and whatnot, and score points at the end of the game. And it's just very clever in that, like, it lets you draft and it gives you initiative and you get bonuses when you draft, and then you can buy sheds or barns or something that give you bonus abilities and points, and then you can take actions on the board where you can collect various things and pay for them, and your currency is like beans, so you're trying to harvest the beans so you have more money to spend. Really, really clever game. I really liked it a lot after several plays in the month of May. Number 8 is Council of Four. Boy, this game went over way better than I even thought it would. And this is from... oh, CMON publishes it now. Come on, games. But it was Cranio Creations. And Council of Four is like an action selection game. Whew, it's a little tricky to explain. But basically, you're trying to build, like, you're like merchants, and you're trying to influence the council so you can build outposts in various cities. And as you chain all the cities together, you gain a whole bunch of bonuses, which is extremely satisfying. This is what you're looking for in a strategic bureau. Like, I'm going to build here and get a coin, and then I'm going to build next door and get 2 points and a coin, because it's next door to that. And then I'm going to build here, and I'm going to get to draw a card and get 2 points and get a coin. And you just keep building from there, and you're trying to complete certain objectives, and you're kind of racing over things. And it's just like that perfect 60-minute, Chris Kirkman would call it a one-hour wonder, and that's what this game is. And it went over great. I played it with Zephra and a bunch of people. She liked it. I played with Kathy. She liked it. So much so I've considered getting the CMON version because I think it would kind of neat to have all the miniatures and whatnot. But I know that's not necessarily Kathy's favorite thing to have all that stuff. So we've stuck with the... I'm not trying to sound bad about you. No, she doesn't think that. Okay. I'm just stating that that's how that is. So anyway, yeah, we've got this version here, and yeah, it's just a really fun game. Number 7... Oh no, I'm trying to read my own handwriting here. Number 7 is Animal Kingdoms. Another hit that we found out from Andrew and Anitra on the Family Gamers podcast, and got a chance to play this, and we've played it a bunch. And it's like an area control in various... locations. You're playing cards with animals on them and ranks, so they have numbers 1 through 8, and you're trying to play to some set. So it might say you have to play here from 8 down to 1, or over here you have to play only these creature types, animal types or whatever, and then you get to add a cube, and the region eventually fills up, and then you kind of take an action that you end that, and you're out of the round, and you play 3 rounds, and there's a bunch of ways you score points. Like, you know how many points it's going to be worth. This is worth 5, then 7. Ooh, 5. And then 7, then 9 for first place. So you're kind of fighting over that territory, knowing in the end it's going to be worth more. It's kind of the idea. And it's just been a great game to sit down and play strategy. And the artwork is really nice. And we all just know how to play the game now, so we just sit down and play, which is a huge bonus. I noticed that a lot with quarantine, like playing games more than twice or 3 times to do a review. And like, this is the 6th or 7th time I'm playing this game, and we just all know it. And we just start shuffling and playing. And that is just such a nice feeling, to have, as it should be. And that's how games really should be played. They should not be bought, consumed, reviewed, and moved on or sitting on a shelf. So that's a good thing, in terms of all that. Number 6 is Everdell. I think this has kind of been a darling as well. Kathy had seen it at PAX Unplugged and asked me to play it, and I had played it before at Gen Con, maybe that same year. I can't remember. Or the year before. And I was like, yeah, no, we should try to play that sometime and see. And I just forgot how clever the game is. And like, it feels like in the beginning you're like, oh, I just have a couple actions and then I'm done. And then it just grows and grows and grows, and you're making this big tableau. I'd be a little afraid of playing this game regularly with 4 players. I think it would slow down a little bit because there's a lot to be thinking about. But it's, again, it's right on that nice part of like thinking versus relaxing in terms of that. I like a good thinking game. I'm looking straight ahead towards Gloomhaven, Lisboa, Teotihuacan, Maracaibo, like Alubari, PAX, Transhumanity. I mean, I like those. But there's a time also where it's like, you know, I'm making combos and I'm collecting all these, and ooh, how fun is it that that card I can play for free just came out? Boom, I'm going to play that card. So it's really nice, and it's just got a great feel to it, a great look with the tree and the little different wooden animal meeples. And the artwork is just phenomenal on all the cards. So it's really got a nice feel to it. So that's number six, Everdell. And then a game that really I'd known a decent amount about, and I really had wanted to play it with Gilhova, is High Rise from Formal Ferret Games. Everdell is Starling Games, by the way, and I don't know Animal Kingdom, so I apologize. But yeah, High Rise is a game where you're building these tall towers in a city, and it's kind of, you know, a city like mocking a New York, essentially. It's like a Manhattan-looking thing. And it's got that, whoever's behind moves up. Nova Luna has that, and several other games where whoever's behind gets to take the next action. And you're collecting all these floor tiles to then be able to build these high rises and knock other people's down to build yours. And I've played it solo a bunch, and I played it two-player, and it's a pretty hard, thinky game. I haven't won yet. I lost the two-player game. I've lost the solo games. But somehow I just keep coming back. It's just a great game to set up. And I know initially it was going to have, like, 3D towers, like probably plastic or whatever, and the cost was just high. So he took it down, he rethought it, and he built these cardboard towers that you think just wouldn't work. They're basically giant standees, and they're awesome. They look so good. Like, I'm more excited to have a cardboard standee than to have a big, giant plastic piece that I have to sort somewhere, and it's gray, so it would look better if it was painted, but I'm not going to paint it, so then I have these gray, drab pieces. So it's really just a nice look, and the game is just so tight. It's so well thought out. I actually messaged Gil just to let him know, like, he just did a great job with this game. So I want to get more and more people to play it. I don't know that the theme really jumps out. Maybe as a New York City lover. I really want to do that and build all those tall towers and whatnot, but I don't think that's it. So I think it's just kind of getting people to sit down and play it. It is a long game. I think it's 3 hours if you play the full game, but he put like a tutorial game in there where you just bypass the whole first decade and you just play two decades, and now you're talking about an hour and a half, 2 hour game, which I think is kind of the sweet spot for this. And a lot of people may even play it there regularly. But I really, really enjoyed High Rise. I like this game a lot. My number five of May. Number four is Concordia. So we got to play Concordia again. This must have been like May 1st, May 2nd, because this feels forever ago. and it's just such a great game. It's that card manipulation, and then, oh, I want to pick up all my cards. And I know Aquatica just got announced that it's coming out from the Dice Tower line, and it's got this Concordia thing. But Concordia is just like almost that right game length. Like, typically the game is about an hour with two players, an hour and a half with three or four. I think the one I played that month extended on because people were learning it to 2+ hours, which is where it gets a little too long for me. And typically, I don't really like a lot of endgame hidden scoring. I don't mind endgame overt scoring, like Gaia Project has that. There's a lot of endgame scoring, but you can see exactly what people are going to score. So you get a good feel after you play it a couple times, like, that's what people are going to be. But Concordia, you have no idea. But it just doesn't matter because it's fun to do all those cards and see everybody's things move up. And it's like watching a chart in real time, like dynamic statistics in front of you. I really just got excited about dynamic statistics, just so everyone knows. But I like seeing all that stuff pile up. And honestly, like, I want to win and I'm mad if I lose person. But I like to win. But there are some games that I could just lose every time and keep playing. And Concordia is one of those games. I could just lose every time. It's just so fun to try to figure out the puzzle and what am I going to do and what cards do I want to draft. And just that simple shuffle of cards and putting them out in different order, which is exactly what Through the Ages does, just changed up the game every time. So I don't do the same things. My number four of the month, Concordia. Number three, Thunderstone Quest. Love this game. I wasn't sure. It was kind of on the chopping block. Am I going to get rid of this? What am I going to do? I got a chance to play competitive, played it cooperative, which is a bear of a game when you play it cooperative. This box is huge. I have it and the expansion in one giant box. It is so heavy, full of cards, and I've sleeved the cards now, so it's very heavy, and it barely fits in there. I absolutely adore this game, cooperative. I like the competitive as well. It feels more like a regular deck builder in terms of that. I really like the cooperative, but you have to be ready to just play, and you are active the entire time. The competitive game gives you downtime. Okay, I'm done with my turn. You guys go ahead. I'm going to grab a snack. I'm going to eat something. Go to the bathroom, whatever. You don't have that in the co-op. You are constantly interacting, constantly saying, what card do you have? Talking through, what are we going to do? What's our strategy? How are we going to do this? Oh, no, we rolled terribly. How are we going to react to that? And it's a brain burner. Like, you just need to get up and breathe before you clean the game up. The setup time is long. The takedown time is long. So for some people, that's going to drive them away. There's a lot of stuff, and the choice to what you're going to set up is a lot. But like I said, now that I got it in the box and sleeved and all organized, thanks to Kathy helping with the organization as always, and it's just really easy to find everything and lay it out. So really good. Number two is a game I haven't reviewed yet, and you're going to hear about this, and this will probably be a big spoiler for the review, but this game came out of nowhere, and I absolutely adore it, and it is probably my favorite game of the year thus far. And this game is Sky Tear from PvP Geeks. So this is a board game version of a MOBA, which I think the most famous of is League of Legends or Dota. I don't know the name of it. The Blizzard one, I apologize. Heroes of the Storm. Where you're running your heroes at the enemy towers and you're trying to destroy them along with all these little NPC minions that come out, and it's representing that. And I thought, oh, this looks like a cool game, and I'd heard Team Covenant talking about it on their channel, and I was like, well, I'll check that game out. I bet it'll be fun for a couple plays. And we played this game, and boy, did we not realize the layers. The layers to deck build, the layers of choices. It's not focusing a whole bunch. It's not focusing a whole bunch on, like, kill the other heroes or specifically attack the towers. There's definitely attacking, but it's not an attack-heavy game. Now, don't get me wrong. It's definitely a battle game. But what happens is you're controlling these lanes and these domes, and by controlling them, you move the control points closer, which is basically, like, furthering your minions up the board so that they can then deal damage to the towers. So you don't actually deal the damage. You rely on them. Which, it's been a while since I played these games online, but that's what you're trying to do. As a team, you're trying to push your minions forward so that they'll do a bulk of the damage. You're not trying to just destroy the tower individually by yourself. You also want them to soak. So you actually can't destroy the towers and attack them. There's several modes of the game. I'm going to do a full review, so I don't want to get too much into it here. But the game is phenomenal. You've got four different colors. You get three actions on a turn with each hero. And then they all have this worship action, which is different. So one faction could add these, like, apparitions out on the board. Another one could put these pillars that they can trigger. Another one can transform into, like, creatures. And another one just marks you and just does a ton of damage. And it's like a tournament-style game. They've got a ton going on online, which, like I said, I'm not much of an online gamer. But the miniature quality is awesome, which prior to painting during quarantine, when I painted all my legions, wasn't something I cared about. But now when I look at these minis, I'm like, ooh, these would be fun to paint. And there's just so much that's really good. Like I said, I'm going to kind of stop talking about it here because I still have to do the full review. But yeah, this is like my game of the year. Two-player head-to-head, different modes and whatnot. They've got more stuff coming out, and I just totally look forward to this. So this is Sky Tear from PvP Geeks. Okay, my number one game of the month. I know it's not fair because it would always be my number one game, but I will tell you why it's my number one game. And it's Marvel Champions. And I promise, as I do these, it will not always be my number one game. But the Black Widow Hero Pack came out, and boy, was she phenomenal. So good in terms of all this. So she's been really fun to play. I didn't realize, like, you play her cards, then she triggers everything during the villains phase. So that's really, really cool. And then the main reason this got really fun was I saw Team Covenant doing the challenge of Ultron Heroic 1. So Heroic mode, without getting into all Marvel, is you draw extra cards. So typically everybody draws one card, but in Heroic 1 you would draw two villain cards. In Heroic 2, Heroic 3, Heroic 4... Well, Ultron is already a very hard opponent, and Heroic 1 is, like, crazy. And so we practiced up and practiced up and practiced up, and Larry and I were able to beat it. It took 2.5 hours. We were absolutely exhausted. I threw the dial up in the air. We cheered. And this was after several days of trying to play it, and we were very excited. And that just made me go, wow, Marvel Champions just went to another level. Already my favorite game of all time. But, yeah, so that's why that became my number one game of the month. That specific play was my favorite play of the month. So, like I said, I'll try not to make Marvel Champions be the thing every month. In fact, I will probably exclude it from all future lists, and you could just imagine it would be number one. But I thought that was worth mentioning, so that's that. Woo! I did it. 1 hour, two reviews, 30 games ranked. I believe there might have been some other games I played that month, but those are the 30 that I'm talking about. In terms of all that. So, hope you had a good month of May as well, and a good month of June by the time you listen to this. I will do my month of June soon. Next up, next episode, there's a bunch of reviews, Tang Garden and Sky Tear and some other things that we'll need to be reviewing. So we'll do that, and I'll get into my games played in June as well. But I think that's it for now. I hope everybody has a great start to their summer, or if you're kind of already in full swing, that you have a great summer going forward. And we'll get back to being able to play together at the table, see each other at cons soon enough. But take that time. Play with the people in your house. Play with family. Play with friends that you're able to see. And just enjoy gaming, because it's a good break. It's a good relaxing thing to do. So this is The Brant, episode number 152 of the Portal Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, and until next time, I hope you step into the portal.